Chapter 1, in which an inspector calls. It is a truth universally acknowledged that any man or woman in possession of a head must be in want of a hat. That was what it said on the front door of Harold and Hilda Harold's Hat Emporium, underneath the gold filigree sign bearing the legend Harold and Hilda Harold's Hat Emporium, and also on the complimentary courier bags given away only to our most select customers. If Harold had had his way, it would have figured on a whole range of souvenir items, from pens and mugs to beach balls and bubble-headed Hildas, but alas, between them, his bank manager and the lawyers representing the state of Jane Austen had put paid to that. Harold himself was an unassuming figure at first glance, and indeed, at second and third glances too. Thinning on top and widening around the midriff, he was a small, slightly shabby man in very late middle age. His wife Hilda was much the same, except where Harold's hair was retreating with each passing year, hers remained as full and bushy as ever, with the only sign of age being a shift in colour from honey chestnut through autumn russet, before finally setting on, undeniably, depressingly grey. Hilda Holmberg, as was, had married Harold when they were both in their early 20s, drawn despite his unimpressive stature to a man who at the very least had some concept of fashion. When it came to headwear, Harold Harold was the last in a long line of Harolds and Harold Harolds, stretching back to just before the invention of the hat, and he had inherited, or so he believed, the sense of the artist when it came to his work. Harold was of the opinion that a hat and a head should be ideally suited, a perfect match before he would ever allow the latter to make purchase of the former. And it is true, in his defence, that he rarely got it wrong. Very few customers indeed ever came back to complain about the hats they had purchased. Unfortunately for business and ergo for the Harolds' relationship with their bank manager, very few customers indeed pretty much summed up the state of the business. Their shop was a small wood-panelled establishment, what most people would term old-fashioned unless they had just zapped themselves forward in time from the 15th century, in which case they'd probably consider it cutting-edge, maybe even a little futuristic. Above the door was a bell, and its thridding was like a call to arms for Harold and Hilda. At the cry of the bell, they would emerge from the back room to attend to every cranial-based clothing requirement of their latest client. Whether it was a thridding,
customer Harold,
customer Hilda.
As one, the Harolds moved from the small, cosy little back room, a haven of tea and tea cosies, Hilda liked to knit in the evenings, and onto their stage, into their limelight, into Harold and Hilda's Hat Emporium. A policeman was stood in the middle of the shop. It took just the briefest of moments for them to recover from the automatic race memory shock of guilt that strikes everybody, whether you're the Pope or the Godfather, at the sight of a policeman.
Evening all.
Constable McCravity had picked up most of what he knew about policing from old Earth cop shows, and unfortunately wasn't afraid to put that knowledge into practice.
Oh my goodness me, yes.
Harold was apparently awestruck, gazing up at McCravity's young acne-ridden face.
An absolute classic, tapering to a point with the badger front.
Gazing up at the helmet just above McCravity's young acne-ridden face.
Functional and simplistic, yes, but my word, a design for all seasons, a perennial, an absolute joy, isn't it, Hilda, eh?
Yes, it's lovely.
Hilda had as much love of hats as Harold, but unlike her husband, she had no pretensions towards being a poet. That probably explained the tea cosies.
Oi, shut it, you slags, said McCravity politely.
He produced from inside his uniform a photograph, which he held up to the two shopkeepers.
Do you recognise this man? And please, don't have nightmares.
Harold and Hilda both squinted at the black and white image. It was of a man's face, rather angular, a superior scowl firmly carved into the full mouth.
We certainly do, yes,
chirped up Hilda. The fact that they had got so few customers notwithstanding, the Harolds prided themselves on never forgetting a sale.
He patronised our humble establishment several weeks ago now,
elaborated Harold.
Not perhaps the pleasantest of gentlemen, but, well, the customer is always right, and a customer he most certainly was.
And how did he pay?
Asked McCravity.
Begrudgingly, but then we're used to that.
A moment went by while the light slowly came on for Harold.
Oh, you mean what method? Oh, silly me, yes.
He paid cash,
broke in Hilda. Mrs. Harold liked to keep a very close eye on the takings after the scandal some years back. Harold had been frittering away rather too much money on the proprietress of Ursula Ermenthorpe's umbrella stand.
That'll do nicely, was McCravity's grim reply.
His vidcast of UK gold repeats of the bill had also contained several old ad breaks. Then, to the confusion of Harold and Hilda, he returned the customer's photograph to his inside pocket, turned smartly on his heel and headed out the shop. On the threshold, he suddenly turned back to face them.
"Oh yeah, just one last thing, a little detail," he drawled. "You're both under arrest."
Chapter 2, in which we get the truth, the whole truth, and, well, you get the idea. On Giddy Majori, it was common practice for most criminal proceedings to be got through as quickly as possible. Rather than waste time and money cluttering up cells for months on end while suspects awaited long, drawn-out trials, it was standard policy to get right on with things the instant an arrest was made. There were, of course, some defenders of democracy and the noble system of the burden of proof who railed against this practice, claiming that with too little time to prepare a defence, there was a very serious risk that innocent people would be incarcerated, or even worse, executed. Unfortunately, those same defenders of democracy lost their case due to the fact they had too little time to prepare a defence, and after the executions, well, the complaint never really arose again. As a development of this system of swift, if not altogether accurate justice, it had for some years now been the law that wherever possible all inquiries and trials should be held at the place of residence of the accused person or persons. Rather improbably, this idea had originated from the then chief of police, who, as a big fan of musical theatre, relished the thought of proclaiming, "Let's hold the trial right here!" in the manner of Mickey Rooney, or in his case more probably Julie Garland. And the financiers and bean counters who made up the vast majority of the government of Giddy heartily endorsed the proposal, on the grounds that it saved them spending money on unnecessary court buildings and the like. It also meant that the criminals were in fact responsible for the upkeep of the courtroom used in their case, since it was their own property.
"And a secondary charge of failing to maintain the court in appropriate order,"
continued the court clerk officiously, casting a disparaging eye over the excessive number of hats that littered the place.
"The fine for this is a standard 500 credits.
"Are we not paying that?" protested Harold.
"There's no need,"
replied the clerk in the same officious drone.
"The sum will be taken from your estate that will automatically pass to the state when you are executed."
"Don't you mean if?"
demanded Hilda tremulously.
"Yes,"
drone.
"If."
The tone of his drone was not encouraging. But to recap, as things have moved on since Constable McCravity's shocking arrest of the Harolds, shocking to the Harolds, that is, clearly McCravity had been confident of making an arrest from the moment he entered the shop, as at a signal from him, a whole team of court persons had emerged from a van parked just outside and had proceeded apace to prepare the shop for due process of law.
But, what have we done?"
stammered Harold, as clerks and reporters and guards, even a judge, transferred themselves from a Ford's van hover transit into his shop.
"You are charged with selling a hat to this man," explained McCravity, tapping his pocket.
"Surely that's not an offence," said Hilda. "I mean, we sell hats to people all the time, but we've never been arrested for it before."
"This particular man went on to try and destroy the whole of creation," was McCravity's grave reply.
There was a long pause, while a significant glance passed between Harold and Hilda.
"Oh dear," said Harold.
"And the law is of the opinion that it was your hat that made him do it," went on McCravity.
"Oh dear, oh dear, oh dear."
"So," concluded the policeman, "keep him peeled."
His Most High and Noble the Lord Justice Angleton Fitzroy Forbeson III was one of those timeless clichés. That is to say, he was an old, wizened judge with a beaky nose, appalling hearing, and a wavering but distinctly upper-class accent. He also affected the manner of judges the world, indeed the universe over, of knowing nothing whatsoever about anything at all to do even slightly with whatever men and women, or men and men, or, heaven forbid, women and women got up to in private. In Angleton's case, at least, it was purely affectation, born of the fact that he believed judges should be seen to be above such coarse and physical issues. In reality, he was fully conversant in all such matters, and secretly based his enthusiasm for each case on how sordid and filthy the witness statements were likely to be. Consequently, when he read the dusty phrase, "accused of selling headwear to deranged megalomaniac," on his sheet for the day, he was instantly put into a bad frame of mind to the extent that he had taken the precaution of bringing his black cap with him so as to save time later on.
"The defendant, Harold Harold of Harold and Hilda Harold's Hat Emporium,"
this was the clerk of the court, at the very beginning of his now legendary drone.
Is accused of selling one item of headwear such as to cause the purchaser of said headwear to attempt the destruction of all life as we know it.
Harold was stood miserably on a stool, flanked by two armed guards. The stool was the only thing they could find to stand in as a witness box, and the clerk had already made a note to fine Harold an additional 200 credits for insufficient court furnishings.
Hold on a minute,
piped up Hilda, who was stood to one side.
What about me, then?
As a mere woman, the law considers you to be only a chattel to said Harold, and consequently too insignificant and or feebly lacking in any kind of independence or autonomy to be worth the consideration of the law,
droned the clerk.
You what?
Snapped Hilda.
That's not fair.
Just my little joke, said the clerk. You're charged as well. Get up there with your husband.
That's better.
Hilda scrambled up onto the stool beside Harold. It wasn't really designed for two, but for all their lack of any real physical beauty, the Harolds were quite a tactile couple, and happily made the best of it.
You see, smiled the clerk, justice can be amusing as well as vindictive.
A pause as the clerk rather optimistically held for a laugh. Two, three, and then back to the droning with a vengeance.
How do the guilty couple plead?
Not guilty,
was the firm reply from both parties.
What, really?
Judge Fitzroy Forbeson failed to keep the irritation out of his voice. He had hoped for an immediate admission of guilt, followed by an immediate execution, and then hopefully onto another case, perhaps one that involved pole dancing in some respect. The thought that these people were going to put up some kind of defence and drag out this whole sorry business really was too much.
I warn you, if you waste the court's time, it will be very much the worse for you.
Well, began Harold nervously, I appreciate that, Your Honour, but with respect, sir, we're due to be shot anyway, so there's not much worse it can get.
His lordship mulled this over.
You make a very good point. I did not realise you were bringing such a keen, incisive legal mind to this affair. Very well, continue.
The court prosecutor, tall, thin, toothy, and by God smug, even at 50 feet, took to the floor, looking, and he knew it, the very bee's knees in his robes and silks.
My lord, he smarmed, this is manifestly a straightforward and clear-cut case, whereby the accused person sold an item of apparel, to wit, one hat, which in turn brought about an attempt to wipe out all life as we know it.
He spun smartly on the spot to point a perfectly manicured finger at the poor Harolds.
Mr. Harold, he snapped.
Yes, sir?
Please tell the court the events of the 21st.
The 21st?
If you would be so kind, yes, smiled the prosecutor. Please tell the court all about your encounter with Professor Skagra.
Chapter 3. Cue the flashback sequence.
Tring!
Customer Harold!
Customer Hilda!
Knocking back the last of their mid-morning tea, the Harolds entered the shop, ready to assist their latest client. He was a tall, blond-haired man, sturdy and stood with a dramatic air in the middle of the shop, his hands on his hips.
A good morning, sir,
greeted Harold cheerfully.
Is it? Was the curt reply. To be fair, it was a pretty dreadful morning outside. The rain had been falling hard since dawn, to the extent that Harold had earlier joked he was considering buying a boat and stocking it with two of every hat, just in case. Either way, before Harold could try and smooth over this prickly start, the customer continued.
I need a hat.
Straight down to business. Very admirable, sir, said Harold. Might I just inquire whether your hat requirement is simply as a means of keeping the rain off?
That is one reason, yes, came the stern reply.
I see, yes.
There was a momentary pause, then.
It's just that I feel obliged to say, sir, that if you're only looking to keep yourself dry, then in the arcade just a few streets away is an excellent umbrella outlet run by a most charming lady, which might well suit you better.
Oh, if you like being sold shoddy second-rate goods by an overdressed strumpet,
offered Hilda cheerily.
I said it was one reason, said the customer. I have others.
Very well then, sir.
Harold threw a look at Hilda, who merely grinned in reply before starting upon the art of the sale.
Is this a hat for everyday purposes, sir, or is it a more formal affair?
For business purposes, you could say.
Oh, very important then, sir,
commented Hilda.
You'll want something professional looking.
Indeed.
As a rule, sir, I'd recommend black,
began Harold contemplatively. He had emerged from behind the counter and was circling his latest client, examining in close detail the head which wished to be graced with one of his creations.
It's a traditional, it's classic, it's dignified, and yet at the same time, it's always up-to-date and modern.
Like some kind of haberdashery ninja, Harold suddenly pounced upon a shelf, turning back to the customer within seconds, holding a hat in either hand. Harold usually liked to start off from something almost depressingly old-fashioned, and then work his way up from there. And this occasion was no different. He held out both the top hat and the bowler, gauging the customer for some kind of response.
What about these, sir?
I don't think so, was the sum total of the feedback. Harold sighed inwardly. This was going to take a while.
Might we ask, sir?
Piped up Hilda from behind the counter.
Just what sort of business occasion it is?
The customer turned to face her. His scowl momentarily turned into a sneer. It was not an improvement, and Hilda involuntarily stepped back.
The domination of the universe, came the reply.
A very brief pause, and then Harold recovered himself.
In that case, sir, I don't think either of these.
He replaced the top and bowler on their dusty shelves.
As I say, black would be my first instinct, but you know, if you're going to be dominating the universe, well, you should be saying, I do things my own way, scum of the universe, even down to the choice of headgear. So given that, and given that I think black would almost certainly clash with the grey leggings, grey jumpsuit and grey shoulder pads that you're currently sporting, I'm going to suggest that we abandon black and perhaps go for something in grey instead.
The customer pointed to a shelf just behind Hilda.
What about that one?
Oh, it's a quality hat, sir. Very, very respectable choice, but I'm not totally sure a flat cap really says, bow down before me, sons. I am your god now.
The customer acknowledged the logic of this with a slight bow.
Perhaps you're right. So what do you suggest, shopkeeper?
What sort of universal domination did you have in mind, sir?
Asked Harold. I mean to say, if it's going to be some kind of long-winded blood and thunder campaign, you'll want something that's going to be hard-wearing, something washable.
Ah, I see.
The customer drew himself up to his full height, sneering again now.
It is not a domination in the traditional sense of violence and slaughter, no. I will be consuming all of creation into the universal mind.
Ah, the universal mind, eh? Mused Harold. In that case, I think you're going to need quite a big hat.
So, concluded Harold, we sold him a wide-brimmed hat from our new Trilby Sombrero crossover range in a grey silver. Suited him to a T, didn't it, Hilda?
It was a lovely hat, Harold,
agreed Hilda sadly.
A perfect match.
Lovely hat it may have been,
the prosecuting counsel was up on his feet again now that Harold's story had finished, but it is claimed by the Dronid Embassy, acting on behalf of Professor Skagra, that it was too tight, that the brim was restrictive, and that the consequence of the increased pressure to the Professor's higher cerebellum prompted his subsequent misguided actions, vis-a-vis taking over the universe.
But he said he was going to do that before he even tried the hat on.
Hilda was outraged.
We didn't make him do anything he wasn't already planning.
Perhaps. Perhaps not.
Smarm, smarm. Quick flash of white teeth at the judge.
However, even if you did not cause his actions, you certainly did nothing to prevent them. Whether the charge be incitement or mere aiding and abetting, there is still a case to answer, and the firing squad is ready and waiting.
But that's ridiculous!
Hilda stepped down from the stool to assume the mantle of defence counsel. She crossed to the judge, resplendent in his ermine robes and with his legs dangling over the front of the counter.
Your lordship, please,
she pleaded earnestly.
This is silly. All we did was to sell a hat to a customer. We can't be held responsible for what he may or may not have done, or might have tried to do but not managed to, or might have thought about doing but not actually done.
She paused, momentarily lost.
Oh, yes, we can't be held responsible, blah, 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 for all of that because he was just wearing one of our hats.
Fitzroy Forbeson seemed to mull this over, his wiry old jaw literally chewing as he considered it. He smiled, not unkindly, at Hilda's teary face.
My dear Miss Harold, I wish I could assist.
If, say, your case had been set in some kind of sordid strip joint, or if your defence had centred around the phrases scantily clad or naked skin glistening in the morning dew, then perhaps I might have been empowered to intervene, but alas...
It took a moment or two for Hilda to realise that this was in fact the end of the judge's speech. She turned to Harold, distantly aware of the noise of six identical weapons being discreetly charged up by the burly men stood patiently in the far corner, ready to carry out sentence.
Harold!
Harold's watery eyes met Hilda's across the room.
I'm sorry, Hilda, my love. I don't know what else we can do, he whispered. I really think this could be the end.
Chapter 4, in which the Doctor saves the day. Well, what did you expect?
Tra-ding!
Suddenly the door opened, and 20 or more faces, not to mention 6 guns and a gavel, turned as one to see a scruffy figure enter. He was medium height, his fair hair cut simply with a central parting, and wearing an outsized jacket that was black with pinstripes over a shirt and jumper. He held in his hand a battered old leather tool bag.
Customer Harold!
Customer Hilda!
After 3 decades, it had become automatic.
Good morning,
greeted the newcomer cheerily. He had a lined face and a twinkle in his eyes, but despite his nondescript appearance, he had an air of considerable intelligence. Am I interrupting? He asked, taking in the assembled courtly persons.
Frankly, yes,
snapped Fitzroy Forbeson, keen to get this whole sorry, not to mention dull, business out of the way as soon as possible.
Who exactly are you?
I'm the Doctor, said the newcomer. This produced a surprising reaction from the prosecutor, who dropped all of his pretensions and smarminess and gasped,
The Doctor?
Yes, have you heard of me? Asked the Doctor innocently.
Professor Skagra claimed that his plans for universal domination were foiled by the Doctor,
explained the still-son prosecutor to the court at large.
Was that you?
Well, it certainly sounds like me. The Doctor seemed to suddenly switch into a more efficient, even business-like mode. He put down his bag and began to wander about the ersatz courtroom, taking everything in. Might I ask what's going on here?
You may not, smarmed the prosecutor, beginning to recover himself.
It's his holy sub judice and a private matter,
snapped Fitzroy Forbeson, covering up his court listing, not to mention the vaguely obscene doodles on it before the Doctor's roving eyes could see.
Well, it's like this, sir,
began Harold, and proceeded to recap the salient points of the story so far. By the end of Harold's story, the Doctor had heard enough, which was just as well, because it was the end, and there wasn't any more.
But this is outrageous, the Doctor turned to the judge and to the prosecuting counsel. You can't sentence innocent shopkeepers to death simply because of a sale to somebody who turned out to be a megalomaniac, can you?
The prosecutor leaned over to confer in hushed whispers with Fitzroy Forbeson. After some moments, they both straightened up.
Yes,
came the response. Oh, the Doctor was momentarily taken aback.
Ah, but wait.
He scurried over to his bag, which was lying on the floor. He began to rummage in it. Wait, please, just one moment. He seemed to be wrestling with an improbable amount of baggage as he unloaded various items from the bag. Slippers, a change of frock coat, a very tatty-looking umbrella.
Tell him where to get a new one and I'll kill you myself,
hissed Hilda to our husband. A set of spanners, 13 volumes of the Encyclopedia Britannica, a sandwich, an old Pentallion drive, and a road atlas for somewhere called Manchester, before finally producing with something approaching triumph,
a stovepipe hat!
The exultant cry came not from the Doctor, but from Harold and Hilda.
Indeed,
it is in fact my stovepipe hat, said the Doctor, proceeding to walk around the court with his exhibit. Purchased some time ago from this very establishment. I'm not an expert on legal matters, observed the Doctor, put in a tone of voice that suggested he might well be that very thing. But if you're willing to lay blame on these good people, Harold and Hilda preened at this description, for selling a hat to one bad person, then presumably they should also take the credit for selling hats to, well, to good people.
Ooh, not just good people, Doctor, piped up Harold enthusiastically. A hero, a genuine hero, that's what you are. Hats to heroes, that's us, isn't it, Hilda?
If we're not about to be shot, Harold, then yes.
The prosecuting counsel had already gone into another huddle to discuss the matter with his lordship. Now his most high and noble, the Lord Justice Angleton Fitzroy Forbeson III, banged his gavel for attention before delivering his verdict.
"Despite the irregularity of these proceedings," he began in his wavery tones, "your point, Doctor, is well taken. The crime of providing a hat to a megalomaniac is still a very grave one, however, and you must both be more careful in future."
He cast a stern look at the heralds, who heartily assured his lordship that they would most certainly be more careful in future. "Oh, yes, indeed. You can rely on us, your lordship, no doubt of that. Thank you, your honour. Touch of the forelock. Thank you, sir.
However, since you also provided a hat or hats to this gentleman here, who, by the prosecuting counsel's own admission, was responsible for preventing the nefarious megalomaniacal activities of your original customer, then I believe some kind of natural balance has been restored. Case dismissed, and Mr. Honeyspoon?"
"Your Honour?"
The prosecutor turned out to have a name after all, although sadly a very silly one.
"I think we can adjourn, and perhaps a spot of lunch at the Pink Pussycat Club before moving on to the next case."
In a very short time, the judge, the smarming prosecutor, the droning clerk, the firing squad, even the heretofore silent stenographer, had removed themselves from the shop, and other than the memory of events and the feeling of having narrowly escaped by the skin of their teeth, the heralds and their shop returned to normal.
"Oh, Doctor,"
said Hilda, kissing him firmly on the cheek.
"I'm so glad you turned up. I don't know what would have happened otherwise."
"I do," said Harold grimly. "It would have been curtains for us instead of hats, that's what. But yes, thank you, Doctor, for turning up when you did. Did you hear about our plight of some kind of space-time telegraph service, or what exactly?"
No, not exactly. The Doctor appeared a trifle embarrassed.
"Actually, I came to return this, you see."
He held up the stovepipe hat, which he had displayed to such effect earlier on.
"And this."
He rummaged in his bag and produced a furry astrakhan hat.
"And this."
He rummaged yet again, this time dragging out a rolled-up straw hat.
"That's the Panama Fold-Up 260,
gasped Harold admiringly. "You see," went on the Doctor rather shamefacedly, "I've got all these clattering up the TARDIS and, well, I'm not really a hat person anymore, so..." His voice tailed off a little. Then, getting back to the point, "So I wondered if I might just return them and get my money back?" There was a deathly hush, broken eventually by a sharp intake of breath through Harold's teeth.
"I don't know about that, Doctor. After all, we do have a business to run."
"Harold!" Hilda was sharp. "He's just saved our lives. Don't be so miserly."
"You're quite right. Of course you are, my Hilda, my love." Harold turned to the Doctor. "I can give you store credit, Doctor. Can't say fairer than that now, can I, eh?"